I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, some good news to start the show. Efforts to combat fraud and self-dealing after an Undivided whistleblower report have been resurrected on a bipartisan basis. We'll discuss. Plus, angry parents and community members pack a Puyallup school board meeting after allegations that a male wrestler sexually assaulted his female opponent. And we dive into what the teachers' union is spending its dues on. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. What a smoking deal. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPOD.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Oh my gosh, I'm shocked. I'm tickled. Do I get to start the show with good news? Man, we're just making things happen here on Undivided, lest you think independent journalism in Washington State isn't important. So, of course, back in October, we aired what I think is really one of the most important pieces of investigative journalism we've done on this show. We aired a report with a great deal of help from a brave whistleblower about rampant self-dealing within a $260 million taxpayer-funded program called the Community Reinvestment Program. This was a program that was supposed to be the Democrats' answer to the war on drugs. We're going to help people of color who were thrown in jail for drug crimes. And so they set up this fund, initially $200 million. They added another $60 million, doled that money out to BIPOC nonprofits that were supposed to put it in the hands of qualifying community members of color to do things like buy a home, pay off personal debt, start a business, get legal help with past criminal offenses, etc. And what our whistleblower found and what we exposed at the end of October, as you well know by now, is that in a lot of those BIPOC nonprofits, like the Seattle Metropolitan Urban League, they were using the money on themselves. They got millions of dollars and they gave it to their employees to buy houses. They gave it to family members to buy houses. One employee at the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle got nearly $50,000 to pay off personal credit card debt. And that was never how that money was intended to be used. Now, I expressed disappointment on this show last week because Republicans had introduced two bills that would have dealt with two of the biggest underlying issues in our expose, and that is the self-dealing. Like, we're going to take this money and turn community members away, but we're going to use it to help ourselves. And then the issue of stacking, which is there's multiple state programs that essentially provide people of color free money to buy a house. And what was uncovered by our whistleblower is that you had a lot of double dipping, where one person, usually someone very well connected within the BIPOC nonprofit world, would get money from this program and this program and this program, and they'd essentially end up with a free house. So Republicans had introduced these bills, and as we told you, those bills died in committee. Democrats did not seem interested in moving those bills out of committee, missed the deadline. And so I was on this show last week saying, you know, Democrats don't care about addressing fraud, and everything brought up by our whistleblower was essentially for nothing. Not so fast. So we got notified over the weekend that there was a quiet bipartisan effort to take what was happening in the substance of those two Republican bills and to fold it into an existing bill over in the House that had to do with basically how the Community Reinvestment Program would proceed forward. The bill in and of itself, House Bill 2523, isn't really something that I would have gotten behind initially or that Republicans would support, because all it did is codify the future of this program that, in my opinion, has been rife with fraud. That's the vessel. But Republicans like State Representative Travis Couture, State Representative Chris Corey saw an opportunity. They saw an opportunity to work with Democrats and say, hey, let's take this bill that on its face you can say is a big win for the Community Reinvestment Program, and let's put some changes in it. Let's put some amendments in it. And so behind the scenes, they worked together, Republicans with Democrats. And I'm going to give Democrats credit here. I think there's a strategic reason they did it like this, but I don't care if the end result is the same. And they convinced Democrats to take these amendments that they were going to run on the floor. It gets a little jargony, and to put it in there as a striker. And so now House Bill 2523 has language in it that will prevent self-dealing in the community reinvestment program, and it has been passed off the floor of the House on a bipartisan basis. This is what a segment of this bill now reads. The department must prohibit an organization that receives a grant under this section from distributing the funds to an officer who has an interest in or receives any compensation from the recipient organization, a family member of an officer who has an interest in or receives any compensation from the recipient organization, or a business or nonprofit owned or managed by an officer who has an interest in or receives any compensation from the recipient organization. That is huge. That's the key thing that was raised by our whistleblower in the report. They're using the money on themselves, not only for themselves and their family members, but they're taking portions of these funds that they're given and they're sliding them over to other nonprofits that they control or their officers control. They're using it to enrich themselves. Democrats agreed to put that language in the bill. Thanks to cooperation with Republicans, Republicans pushing the issue, not letting the issue die. And this bill passed with that language off the floor of the House. There was also another important provision that was put into this bill, House Bill 2523, and it emerged from committee like this. Now, it doesn't say the word audit, but it puts language in here that basically says the community reinvestment program has to be audited on an ongoing basis. It says the Department of Commerce shall collaborate with the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. The Washington State Institute for Public Policy must conduct a study researching, analyzing, and determining to the extent practical the Department of Commerce's distribution of and the recipient organization's use of and the impact of the funds allocated under the community reinvestment account. That's language that was not in there previously. So now we have two big issues that are taken care of, all thanks to this whistleblower report, Republicans' refusal to give up just because the Senate bill dies, and yes, Democrats' willingness to put those changes in a bill. Now, why was it done this way? I believe there's a couple things. I think that Democrats were worried about the optics among the Black community if they supported Republican bills that sought to rein in alleged fraud and self-dealing within this program. But it goes over much better, I think, for them and for, you know, communities of color who vote for them. If they say, well, the bill itself is a Democrat-backed bill, and the bill itself is about codifying that the community reinvestment program is going to continue. You see how the optics of that are much different? But I also give them credit because they know that what was happening in these programs is problematic. They know it. And so this was a way for them to say, hey, if we want these funds to help the Black community, we need to have some stipulations in here that those funds actually go to help community members who they were intended for. And so, yeah, did they do it based on optics? Yes, but I give them all the credit in the world for doing so. State Representative Christine Reeves was a big part of this. She's a Democrat. So this allowed her to have a win and say, we're going to continue the community reinvestment program in a profound way. But then to also say, and we're going to hold it accountable. Here she is.
When we put a program into statute, we are saying that it must operate transparently, it must be measured, and it must withstand public scrutiny. It must continue to earn the trust of this body, Mr. Speaker, and the people of Washington State. We piloted it, we measured it, it's working. Today, Mr. Speaker, I'm asking you to join me in voting yes for responsible government that promotes restorative justice, data-informed policy that puts people first, and clear results that help communities thrive.
Amen, Christine Reeves. I ain't got no problem with one bit of that. That's amazing. And look, if you had to do it in this way where it looked like Democrats were spearheading it, by all means, you could celebrate the program. Now, the challenging part here for Republicans is technically they had to vote to pass a bill that says the community reinvestment program is going to continue. But here's the thing, they have no power to stop it from continuing. Even if they didn't vote for this, Democrats were going to pass this. So I can see how they kind of have to, you know, hold their nose and do it, but this was the only way for them to vote to pass this overarching bill to get these anti-fraud protections in there. And again, Representative Travis Couture is one of the ones who was working behind the scenes with Christine Reeves and other Democrats to make this happen.
I'm just really appreciative of the accountability and sideboards and that were put into the striking amendment and also some of the protections for the community that the Community Reinvestment Program is supposed to serve, and also protections for whistleblowers when things do go wrong. And that's the kind of accountability we should expect from the largest grant in state history.
Yeah, and he said, look, I know that some of my Republican colleagues aren't super jazzed about voting for a bill that continues what, frankly, is a racist program. I mean, it's preference based on skin color. But he recognizes what I just laid out, which is they're going to pass it anyway, so we might as well vote for it. But he even says, look, it's not perfect. This bill is going to go over to the Senate, and hopefully they can continue to improve it there.
There's, for some, a little bit more work that needs to be done, and I think those discussions will continue. And I believe that, and I trust that. You know, although some have some concerns about the program at large, this bill is not about enacting or getting rid of this program. This is about adding those accountability and sideboards and making sure that it serves the community it's supposed to serve. Please vote yes with me.
Yeah, and a yes vote is the right thing to do. A yes vote is the right thing to do. I think some Republicans voted against it. I get it. It's a race-based program, but it exists. And until you have the majority, it is going to continue to exist. Now, as he said, it's not perfect. There's one key element that was not captured in these amendments or the strike or anything, and that was the part about stacking. So the Senate bill that failed to advance, Senate Bill 6167, would have outright prohibited stacking. There was one example in our whistleblower report that, to me, shows the urgent need for it. They're turning people away while this woman named Asia Williams, whose mom worked for the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, got multiple different kinds of grants toward the purchase of a home. They added up to like $350,000. The purchase price of the home was only $424,000. So she essentially got a free house. Multiple organizations gave her $100,000, $100,000. She got it from the Community Reinvestment Program, from the Covenant Home Ownership Program. And, you know, even internally, we had obtained emails with some of these organizations saying, hey, shouldn't we be using this money on more people, not just one person who's well-connected? So the part of this that prohibits stacking did not make it into this House bill. However, I have it on pretty good authority that there are senators, because this will go over to the Senate, that are working to try to get an amendment in there that would prohibit this kind of stacking. And again, this is not controversial. It really should not be controversial. If you actually intended to help people with this program, which I want to believe you did, even though I think it's a racist program, if you actually intended to help people, you should be helping people and not just one person or a couple well-connected people. And again, you can look at the internal emails from some of these organizations that we obtained. Even internally, they knew it was wrong. Even internally, they knew the money should be used to help more people toward homeownership, not one chick get basically a free house. I did get a comment this morning from our whistleblower, Corey Orvold, who, as you know, went to Olympia and testified on behalf of the Senate bills. She was ecstatic. I had a phone conversation with her as soon as I heard that this was going to go down on the floor. She is overjoyed by this. She sent me a written statement this morning. I am encouraged to see the House pass this important legislation. It is essential these funds reach the community members they were created to support, not individuals connected to the organizations responsible for distributing them. And I think, like me, she wants to see a couple things done over in the Senate side. The anti-stacking part of it really needs to go into effect. And then whistleblower protections. There should be protections for people like her or people within government at the Department of Commerce. I mean, honestly, if you're in government, you should be mandated to report, you know, knowledge of self-dealing, knowledge of fraud or whatever it is. But I think also if you're contracted with the government to dole out these funds, you should be mandated to report the same, but also have protections if you come forward to expose wrongdoing that you see. One other thing, and I'm glad that Representative Couture said this, there has been a lot of focus from the right on fraud within BIPOC organizations. Whether that means that there's more fraud in those organizations, I'm not sure. I mean, I know that in 2020, there was a lot of money doled out to Black community groups, you know, during that whole racial justice uprising that really did not have very much oversight. We saw what happened in Minneapolis with the Somali community. There seemed to be some echoes of that in Washington State. But to Travis's point, and I think he's very strategic in the way he says this, because if the left feels like this is all about just putting a check on Black people and how they spend money, they're going to be much less motivated to do it because they'll call it racist, right? So Travis makes a great point here at the end.
All state government could use these similar accountability measures. And if we stop here, it could be construed as only scrutinizing programs that serve the very people that this program serves. And that would be wrong.
I agree. Let's do it for everyone. Every government contract, no self-dealing, no helping yourself, no helping your family, no helping entities you own. This is common sense. And by all means, if there are whistleblowers out there who have information about fraud or self-dealing or theft or whatever it is from any sort of taxpayer-funded program, be it run by white people or black people or Hispanic people or Asian people or space aliens, I would love to hear about it. But this is really good news. And I was so overjoyed that Republicans put that extra effort in to say, no, we're not just going to let this effort die. We're going to get creative. We're going to work across the aisle. We're going to give Democrats a win in the process, because what matters to us is making sure that there isn't fraud and self-dealing. So it's just great. And I'm so happy that we could be a part of making that change at the state level and protecting some of those taxpayer dollars. Lest you think I'm done with the good news. No, not at all. Why wouldn't I keep going? The bills and the efforts from Democrats in Olympia to make the initiative process more difficult in Washington state are officially dead. You gotta love that. Senate Bill 5973, House Bill 2259, dubbed the Initiative Killers, would have done a couple things with the sole purpose of undermining the people's right to initiative and referendum. Specifically, it would have said you can't use signature gatherers who are paid on a per signature basis. And then it said before you even do an initiative, you have to go out there and get 1,000 signatures to prove that you actually have an idea or an initiative people are interested in. And it was really just about, as you know, Democrats seeing what entities like Let's Go Washington have been able to do in cutting down the cost of running a successful initiative, being able to basically run an initiative on anything because they've got the system down so well. And Democrats are like, we can't have that because our friends will be spending millions of dollars trying to fight some of these anti-tax measures or these anti-radical gender ideology measures. So they just want to make it more difficult. It's the second year in a row they've tried to pull something like that. In the second year in a row, they haven't been successful. Now, I have a statement from Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington I'll read momentarily, but I do want to say, I always say positive reinforcement. As much as I don't really think it's my job necessarily to give politicians credit for doing the right thing, like they should just do that. In this sort of environment, I do think a little positive reinforcement goes a long way. And both these years, this year and last year, when it comes to these efforts to undermine the people's right to initiative, a key player in stopping them has been Secretary of State Steve Hobbs. And I believe he's owed a tremendous amount of gratitude and credit for that, because he is a Democrat. He's a state official in charge of our elections. And he not only has, you know, not contributed or supported efforts to undermine the initiative process, he has shown up at hearings and testified against these bills. And in an environment where it's really hard to go against your own party on anything, he is owed a lot of credit for that. So I would make a recommendation that if you feel so inclined, you send his office a little thank you email with whatever you want to say. But I think appreciating the fact that he went against a lot of members of his own party in protecting the people's right to initiative. Very, very important. And so it's not lost on me that it can be difficult to do that sometimes and stand up for what's right. Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington put out a statement about the death of the initiative killer bills. You thought you'd kill the initiatives? No, we killed the bills. He said the attempt by the legislature to kneecap the people's initiative process was both shameless and arrogant. The demise this week of this initiative killer bill is a rare win for the people of Washington state. The bill would have chilled participation in our state's initiative process, with penalties making citizens and voters think twice before participating in the signature gathering process. Thousands immediately spoke out against the bill and continued to express concern. We're glad to see that their voices were loud enough to shame the legislature into pulling the bill. This is a hard-earned victory protecting one of the few tools voters have left to fight against an otherwise unchecked legislature. Amen. Let's take the little wins where we can get them, because Lord knows you guys tell me all the time, Brandy, I love your show, but I'm so depressed after watching it. No, and I feel great about, you know, especially at this time that we're going through this battle with the legislature, the House Democrats, to be treated like other members of the media. I mean, I think this show and you guys and your involvement in all of this, we've had a lot of wins that have originated here in the last few months. I mean, The biggest win, of course, is me getting those damn anti-Trump signs taken down at the ferry terminal in Bainbridge Island. No, that's just a little one. But the whistleblower thing was very important to us. We worked on that story for 6 months. The whistleblower had been working to gather information, Corey, for more than a year. I know, and she gave me permission to tell you that she has a meeting today with an investigator from the Attorney General's office. So to see that pressure have some sort of result and some sort of positive outcome, it's what we want, right? It's what we want to do. And with the Puyallup situation, which we're going to talk about next, I mean, having that male wrestler drop out of the state tournament, even if it was their choice and they weren't forced out by adults making sane decisions, that's still a victory. The fact that an alternate who's an actual girl got to take the spot that was rightfully theirs, that's a victory. So, you know, if you feel beaten down sometimes, like we can't make a difference, look at the difference that we've made in the last couple months on some of these key issues. And our audience is growing by the day. And I'll be damned if I let the legislature tell me that we're not members of the media because I advocate for things. Okay. You guys pretend that you don't advocate for things, and you advocate for things all the time in the legacy news. So we're going to keep doing what we're doing, even if it stops me from being able to get a press pass to the State House in Olympia. All right, as I said, I'll have an update on the Puyallup story next. I went to the school board meeting last night. I was so grateful to see people there telling the school board how they feel about everything that's been happening in that district. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider joining the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They've been wonderful advertisers on our show now for a couple years. And I've had the privilege of going to a few events and speaking to their members. And that's one of the big things about the organization that I think is a benefit to becoming a member is it really is this great group that kind of provides support for each other at a time when landlords are being treated like the enemy. And so I know that just being part of an organization where you feel like you can commiserate with other people who are going through what you're going through is great, but also they're working hard on your behalf. I mean, RHA played a role in killing the increased fees on short-term rentals this session, which was a big win. And then they can also help you on an individual basis try to navigate this complex world of housing policy that we have in the state. So become a member of RHA today, rhawa.org. Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right. So, of course, there is still a lot of conversation around what's happening in the Puyallup School District after our report about Callie Keeler, a 16-year-old wrestler who, unbeknownst to her, was forced to wrestle a biological boy who identifies as a girl. And she says she was sexually assaulted during that match. I mean, gosh, look how much has happened with this just in the last few weeks. We know that the U.S. Department of Education is now investigating. We know that the Pierce County Sheriff's Office has referred potential charges for rape to the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, which continues to investigate. We know the boy has dropped out of the state tournament, been replaced by the alternate, a girl. So I think that this is a story, and I'm trying to figure out, I think there's a lot of reasons why this story has resonated in a way that, you know, some of our other coverage of boys and girls sports and this whole issue hasn't. Part of it's because, you know, you see this on video and you see this 16-year-old girl's face and you see what she went through and she says what's happening to her as it's happening and she's very credible, right? But also, you know, I think most people can see this and say, we can't force a 16-year-old girl to wrestle against a boy. We can't trick her into it. And so it just took on a life of its own. And maybe this is the thing that's going to start to turn the tide in Washington state as we have the initiative that voters will vote on in November to protect girls' sports in our state once and for all. But there was a school board meeting for the Puyallup School Board last night, and they're not just dealing with this issue. I mean, obviously, this is top of mind for everyone, but we've had a few stories in the Puyallup School District in the last few weeks, including a bunch of girls at Emerald Ridge going to the principal's office to say they don't feel comfortable having to be in a locker room with biological boys, basically being shunned and turned away. You have the fact that you had mandatory reporters who did not report what happened to Callie Keeler for 53 days. You have the mother who we had on the show, Jody Holman, whose daughter was, you know, turned on to radical gender ideology at school, and then the school helped her run away from home, and she's still missing. So there's a ton of things. So parents and community members packed the house last night. A lot of the testimony, and I'm going to play a big chunk of it here, but a lot of the testimony had to do with this latest investigation into what happened to Callie Keeler.
What we're seeing in Puyallup School District is just a symptom of the problem that the social experiment has done.
Regardless of differing opinions on athletic participation policies, any allegation of misconduct should be treated with the utmost seriousness, transparency, and adherence to mandatory reporting laws.
Step back and look at the results of non-academic programs such as DEI, SEL, CRT, and gender affirmation.
I have three daughters, and my job is to prepare them for the world and to physically protect them with my strength. I'm here tonight because of Mrs. Cruz's story. If what she says is true, boy used his strength to hurt a girl, not to protect her from harm. What are you as a school board going to do to ensure the safety of girls that you are responsible for? And why was this not reported? Why did the staff not report this to the police when they are initially informed?
We've witnessed the curriculum shift from facts to propaganda, our kids be transformed from students into gender-confused activists, and the shocking erosion of parents' rights.
I know their feeling is the same feeling as mine and my wife's. We love this district, okay? But it's kind of lost its way. I'm a 30-year voter, yes, on levies and bonds, except for the last bond, which was an overreach, and the last levy, because I don't like what I'm seeing in the district.
I've heard some concerning stories recently in our district, such as the sexual assault of a female wrestler, biological males in girls' locker rooms, a junior high student concealed from her parents, and as of this date, still missing, a special ed student at Fruitland Elementary being mistreated and abused by his educators. The parents are now suing the district. Of these, one theme stands out. The district has not worked in partnership with parents. Contrarily, the district and the administrators have hidden pertinent information about students from their parents. Things happen that shouldn't happen. It's not possible to prevent all instances of bad behavior of a student or educator. However, it's possible to work with the parents to inform all parties immediately.
How are your employees being held accountable for shirking their legal responsibilities as mandatory reporters?
Yeah, so I thought that parents and community members did a great job at being respectful, but being firm that this just cannot be allowed. And look, I'll get to a comment from the school board in a moment. I agree with, you know, maybe the assertion that this isn't all the Puyallup school board's fault. And in fact, Puyallup is a fairly sane area of the state. And the school board, I think, is like 3-2 sane, insane. They can only do so much when it comes to policies that have been put down by the state. But I would say they can use their independently elected officials. And there are other school districts that have pushed back and even filed lawsuits over the state's policy. So if there's people on that school board that really do not support this, there is nothing preventing them from speaking up and from trying to take action that forces the state's hand. And I would like to see a hell of a lot more of that. And then also the underlying issue of mandatory reporters not reporting an alleged sexual assault, to the woman's point there at the end, what's being done to hold them accountable? Because that is a gross misdemeanor. It's punishable by up to a year in jail. And so is anyone going to be held accountable for that? Now, there was like one lady there who she had kind of a shirt on that was like kind of love rainbow type thing. So I think she was the only one who was maybe not on the side of most of the room. But even when she testified, I got to say, I really didn't agree with anything. I really didn't disagree with anything she said.
I have seen what is going around on social media about the district. I want to remind the board and the community at large that no matter what the outcome of this issue, it is about one student.
Maybe not.
And that. One student only.
Yeah, okay, I disagree with that.
And not an entire community or an entire identity. All children in our district deserve to feel safe in our schools.
I agree, and that's the problem. All kids deserve to feel safe. So, okay, if you believe that, and I hope that you do, I don't know you, ma'am, but I hope you believe that, then you should want those girls at Emerald Ridge who went to the principal's office and said they don't feel safe in the locker room. You should want something to be done to make them feel safe, right? Callie Heeler, who's a student of the Puyallup School District, you should want her to feel safe, and she doesn't feel safe being tricked into wrestling a biological boy who presses his fingers into her private area. So it's just, they always say that. It's like, all students deserve to feel, but do they really mean it, or they just mean like trans students? And the one thing I'll disagree with what she said is it's not just one kid. This has been happening a lot. The thing that never happens happens quite a bit. And so we have a broader issue here. Now, all of that's going on. And there were issues brought up from parents at the school board meeting that I hadn't even heard about that we're going to look into, like apparently some abuse of a special ed student. And then all the stories that we've talked about alleged misconduct from teachers, from staffers, from school employees. So the president of the Puyallup Education Association is there. So this is the guy in charge of the teachers' union. He doesn't talk about any of this. He gives public testimony. He doesn't talk about any of it. He doesn't weigh in. And by the way, they also support all the radical stuff. That, remember, the Washington Education Association is one of the key players in pushing all this radical ideology that's leading to all this chaos. No, he's there to talk about how they need more money.
Good evening, President Miles, members of the board, and interim Superintendent Lasso. My name is Bob Horton, president of the Puyallup Education Association. I ask each of you to lobby your local representatives and senator for the passage of Senate Bill 6346 that is projected to generate over $3 billion in revenue per year to help fund our schools properly and help our state meet its paramount duty.
Yeah, he wants them to pass the millionaire's tax. All these things, all these complaints about what's happening with the Puyallup School District, teachers not doing what they're supposed to do, allegations of abuse and all that. And he gets up there, we need to pass the millionaire's tax so we can have more money. It's just so indicative of the teachers' union. They literally only care about money. They literally only care about money. Pay us more, give us more money, give us taxpayer money. It's absurd. They don't care about any of this. They're contributing to this. Finally, so the union or the a member of the school board spoke, and look, as I said, I understand that they're bound in some sense by state law, but this is kind of exactly what those girls went through who went to the principal's office and said, we don't feel comfortable with the boys in the locker room. And remember what the school did? They handed them like a printout that read what the policy is on gender inclusivity. And then they handed them this little printout that showed a human body and it told them what like gender identity is. And so it was just, it's condescending. And so the school board member just sat there and literally read the policy on gender inclusive spaces.
I'm going to just go out on a limb and say, I'm going to read this out loud. So gender segregated facilities as defined by Washington's state administrative code is one, facility use. All covered entities shall allow individuals the use of gender segregated facilities such as restrooms.
Yeah, we know,
locker
bro.
Rooms, dressing rooms and homeless or emergency shelters that are consistent with that individual's gender expression or gender identity. In such facilities where undressing in the presence of others occurs, covered entities shall allow access to and use of a facility consistent with the individual's gender expression or gender identity.
We know. That's why they're all there. They don't like it. Does that not just come across as incredibly condescending? These are engaged, active members of the community who came to speak to you about this exact issue. They know what the policy is. They don't like the policy. They want you to do something about it. They want you to use your platform and your power as an independently elected official who helps lead the school district. And they want you to fight back. They want you to push back against OSPI like other school districts have done. They want you to be on the phone with the governor and saying, this is an untenable situation. So don't sit in front of those parents and in front of those community members and read off a policy that they know very well. The policy is why we're all in this freaking position to begin with. Good gravy. Good grief. All right, speaking of the teachers' unions, we were sent this listing for a new job at the WEA. I was blown away with how much they are paying some of their staff members. We'll get into that coming up next. If you're ever wondering where your dues are going, first, if you're thinking about fleeing the state of Washington, or you're going to stay and fight, but you know, you just want to move to a different area, maybe slightly more sane, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com is the guy who you want to call if you're looking to list your home. He does a couple cool things, and I think everything they do at Sell with Wes is aimed at trying to make sure that nothing pops up at the end of a sale that derails everything and taking the stress out of that, those final stages of the process. And if you've ever sold a home or bought a home, you know how stressful those final weeks can be. And so one of the things he started doing about 10 years ago is every listing he sells is pre-inspected. So he takes a proactive approach to preparing listings, and over 90% of buyers on his listings use the pre-listing inspection. He says it often allows folks to waive the inspection contingency, which reduces renegotiations, repair requests, and contract fallout. He says it's one of the core ways that he runs his business, is just trying to take that stress out of the end, no surprises. And then he pairs that with the Listing Boost concierge service, because when you do the pre-inspection, you kind of know what needs to be done, right? So you got that all out of the way. So he can come in, he can help manage those projects. He can even make it so you don't have to pay for those changes and those upgrades or fixes or whatever it is until closing. another way to take the stress out of the process, the financial stress of it. So go to sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. If you're looking to sell your home, it really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, where do all those WEA Washington education dues go? Well, it turns out a lot of those dues go to collecting dues. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. If you're really on the fence, like you're still a member of a teachers union, and you're on the fence because you don't agree with them ideologically, but you're kind of like, oh, I want certain protections in place, I hope this convinces you to stop giving them a chunk of your paycheck every month or whatever it is, because they just use it. It's very similar to Democrats with government. Like, they might not need the money for something, but they got to find a way to use it to justify continuing to take it. So they just grow the size of government. So same with WEA. It's like they just create positions that they don't even need that somebody else could easily do. And it's just growing the size of the WEA and enriching themselves and lining their members' pockets and all of these things. So they have a job opening for the Supervisor of Dues Collections, Processing and Membership Systems. This position plays a critical finance, treasury, leadership, and subject matter expert role within the Washington Education Association. So it says that you're responsible for collecting, supervising the collection. Reconciliation, which I take that to mean, oh, you got somebody dropping out. This person's probably the one who goes to their house with a baseball bat. Like, hey, you didn't pay your dues. I gotta collect. And then accounting of all dues for the WEA, which is, and I don't know if I've ever seen this figure anywhere except on this thing, right? $55 million annually. Holy smokes, $55 million a year. That is wild. And how much are they paying this person? Up to $199,000 a year to supervise the collection of dues. And then they get all these other benefits along with it. Yep, the responsibilities lead coordinator for WEA dues collection process. Yeah, 200. Oh, and this is the other thing I have to point out. COVID-19 vaccination. As part of our commitment to the health and safety of our employees, members, and councils, all candidates must provide proof of full COVID-19 vaccination status upon hire. For what is even full COVID-19 vaccination right now? That's like gotta be 30 boosters at this point. How many, somebody tell me, how many, if you're a nurse or something, how many boosters at this point would you have had to have to be fully vaccinated? Like if you started the vaccine at the beginning and you've kept up on your boosters ever since, how many boosters of the COVID-19 vaccine have you had? 20?
I mean, my guess would have been one a year. Like you have to do it once a year, but it's probably more.
It's probably more than that. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's probably more than that. And the WEA takes whatever the requirement is and they triple it. And then that's, you know, fully vaccinated. They've just got COVID-19 vaccines running through their veins. The WEA is powered on greed and COVID-19 vaccines. So we just wanted to remind you, if you don't want your dues to go to a big, fat, bloated salary that's going to be used to collect your dues, go to optouttoday.com, optouttoday.com. I really do think I need to come up. I don't know how to do this, but I want to do some sort of promo where if you send me that you opted out of the union, and it doesn't have to just be the teachers union. If you go to optouttoday.com, again, optouttoday.com, and click on your state, there's all the unions in there that you can opt out of legally. I want to do some sort of promo where if you show me you opted out of the union, then you get a free year of Undivided. And then I also want to do one where if you show me that you canceled your Seattle Times subscription, you get a free year of Undivided. I'm trying to figure out how to make that work logistically, but I think that's worth it.
It's wild, because if that money is just supposed to go towards, you know, lawyers representing teachers, how many teachers are need $55 million in lawyer fees?
Well, just the Puyallup School District
that's
alone.
That's a problem,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's not, problem. That's not all it is, ads. But they pay lobbyists and all of these things. Yeah. And then they give a bunch of money to keeping boys and girls sports. They give a bunch of money to trying to keep taxes on the books and fight some of the initiative efforts. And even the Climate Commitment Act and stuff. Yeah. They use that money to grow the size of government, because remember what government does when they help grow the size of government? They kicked back, was it $78 million to the WEA to run a teacher training program that had only graduated 12 people? So this is a cycle. Dues go in, go out to help the Democrats get elected, grow the size of government. That money comes right back to the WEA and its whole sick cycle. So opt out today. And I just had to play this since we're dogging on the teachers unions. Even in states like Florida, the teachers unions are crazy. The Florida Teachers Union held a press conference. One of their local directors of Social Equity Through Education Alliance was allowed to speak at it, and he was talking about kids having a duty to continue these anti-ICE protests.
Florida students are confronted with videos of ICE raids, of families being torn apart, and of Americans being murdered for using their constitutional rights. They respond. They organize. They speak out. And they do what American students have always done in moments of injustice. They stand together and demand safety for their peers, their families, and themselves. And that response, while framed by some politicians as radical, is rather reasonable. It's rational. And in a moment like this, it is required.
Required. So that is an FEA press conference, and it's all the union people standing behind this guy who's with the Social Equity Through Education Alliance, and he's saying it's required. That's literally required that students go out and they fight back against the fascism and stuff. And of course, in Florida, they don't tolerate that. So like the AG and the governor, they're like, excuse me? Because that's not allowed here. And so the union actually, I mean, this is what it looks like to have leadership with teeth that does the right thing, because the union's like, oh no, we didn't say that, we don't support that, we don't believe that, we just let a guy from another organization come to our press conference and say that. So opt out today.com. All right, let's just keep it rolling with our segment, The Seattle Times is Trash. So I was on X, as I often am, and I was perusing, and I saw this post from a reporter with the Seattle Times, and it was this posting this sad sack article. The actual X post said, the upswing in CEO pay makes a bad look worse for Seattle's large publicly traded companies. For retail employers that rely on low-wage workers, the ratios show an extraordinarily wide gap. So the actual headline of the Times article, one Washington CEO makes 1,794 times his average employee. Here's why. Well, gee, do we have to go into a article that explains why? Couldn't we just figure that out for ourselves? Because I laugh again. That was the tweet that the language I read previously was actual X post the Seattle Times put out when it said it's a bad look for Seattle's large publicly traded companies. And it says the ratios show an extraordinarily wide gap. And I responded and said, well, there's an extraordinarily wide gap in responsibilities, in experience. That's why, you know, they're running the entire company. And I'm not trying to dog on baristas, but
you're making coffee.
Making coffee, and they're running an entire company with thousands of stores. And the Seattle Times, it just shows their bias, that it's like, it's a bad look. Let's read a little bit from this article, shall we? Starbucks, like most of Seattle's corporate titans, has taken fire from workers and observers and the Seattle Times. I mean, literally in that thing, they're taking fire from the Seattle Times. For the yawning pay gap between executives and rank-and-file employees, an upswing in executive compensation has largely been driven by a rising stock market. Even struggling Starbucks saw a boost in its share price in late 2024 through early 2025 as CEO pay gets more closely tied to stock awards. That swing makes a bad look worse for Seattle's large publicly traded companies, which have to report pay disparity levels contrasting CEO compensation with that earned by the median employee. For retail employers that rely on low-wage workers like Starbucks and Amazon, the ratios show an extraordinarily wide gap in 2025. So our state makes them report what the disparity is. So the Seattle Times has a little graph here that I actually think is pretty handy. It's interesting when you look at this, though. So Starbucks, okay, pay ratio, as they said, 1,749 to 1. So their CEO total compensation is nearly $31 million. Median employee pay, $17,000. Again, they're making coffee at a single location. And I'm not saying that's not a noble job. Great job, I think, for high school students and college students or even a retiree who just wants to work a little bit here and there. They also get, you know, a lot of good benefits if they work enough hours. But you are not running a major corporation. You do not have the day-to-day stress that the CEO of Starbucks has. You do not have anywhere close to the day-to-day responsibilities. And I would actually say it's probably pretty accurate to say that the CEO of Starbucks has 1,749 times more responsibility than an average barista at Starbucks. Oh, but that's bad. Then it has Satya Nadella at Microsoft. Total compensation is about $100 million. Median employee pay is great. $200,000 is their median employee pay at Microsoft. And look, if you want to make millions of dollars, start a company that turns into one of the biggest companies in the world. And also, one of the points I want to make when they say that this has become increasingly, the disparity has been increasing over time. One of the things, because of Washington State's tax policy, and this is going to be, you know, true with the millionaires' tax as well, is it's going to become more advantageous for them to pay executives less in actual compensation and give them more stocks. Because it's easier for them to avoid certain taxes like a millionaire's tax, because they'll have that money in stocks. And then when it comes time to sell their stocks, they can just do what Jeff Bezos did, and they can move to Florida in a place that doesn't have capital gains tax. So you're actually going to see that get worse and worse if they pass a millionaire's tax. Because these people are going to say, whatever you pay me, make sure it's under $1 million a year, and then give me some other stuff that won't count toward my total compensation. That's exactly what they're going to do. And they don't say, and then they're going to whine about it. Oh, look how much the pay disparity is getting even bigger. And it's like, okay. Let's see. Seattle Times, flat salaries, doubled pay. The pay figures disclosed for the chiefs of the country's top public companies are eye-popping. Most of Nicholl's compensation, that's Brian Nicholl, I don't know if that's how you say his name, Nicholl with Starbucks, is derived from stock awards that Starbucks used to replace those Chipotle would have provided him if he'd stayed, because he was the former CEO of Chipotle. But for Eisen and the rest of the union, who are fighting for higher wages, the almost $100 million pay package for Nicholl in 2024 led to a company that ultimately relies on near minimum wage workers, exposed a disparity between the top and bottom of the company. Okay, I'm not even going to read any more of that. It's they're just whining that there's an increasing disparity, but again, a lot of that has to do with the stock market. It's not that they are saying, they're almost suggesting that in order for his pay to go up, he took money out of the pockets of their rank and file employees. And that's just not true. Seattle Times said it in their own article. And then they go on to almost make this suggestion that for him to get paid so much, employees had to get paid, had to be paid less. And that's obviously not the case.
It's also, you're making coffee versus the things that Amazon's doing. I mean, you have to have an education usually to get those jobs. You have to, you know, be a specialist at something, but you're making coffee. So they're complaining about the level of education you need to get a job. So it's okay if you provide something that's worth more.
Right.
But it's not if you don't.
And I'm okay with pay disparity.
That's like, the way look, the world
it's
works.
Not
if there are no
forced labor camp. I say this a million times. We're not working in forced labor camps. You don't have to work there if it really bothers you that the CEO of your company makes 1,700 times what you make. I just can't get over the whining and the fact that the Seattle Times, and they get into Amazon with all of this, the Seattle Times will automatically take the side of like the whiny baristas or whatever it is every single time. And they won't even like give any air to the argument that, yeah, actually, the CEO probably has 1,700 times more responsibilities than the person making a latte at an individual Starbucks store. It's just unbelievable. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, it is still February, so Valentine Roofing, through the month of February, is expanding their customer referral program. So when you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service, or you'll get a $250 gift card. And as you know, you can be confident when referring your loved ones, because every Valentine Roofing customer receives the Valentine experience. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and extra mile service, even in winter weather. And if you're thinking, I need a new roof, but I cannot afford one right now, I know it's not the thing that any homeowner wants to have, but they're just realities of owning a home. And the nice thing is Valentine has flexible financing options available with payments as low as $159 a month and zero down. So a Valentine roof is a roof built around your budget. So first step, if you need a service, call 206 Roofing for your free estimate. And then if you get one, make sure you refer your friends so they can cash in, so you can cash in on that awesome customer referral program. 206 Roofing, and make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, some national news. This one's, I like this because it's sort of, it's not funny. It's just, it's kind of, yeah, it is funny. It's stupid. So look, anyone can introduce a bill. Doesn't mean it's going to pass, but this one's a doozy. This is from KATU in Portland. Controversial petition aims to ban hunting, fishing, and pest control in Oregon. I'm going to guess that PETA is part of this. Oh no, it's a group called PACE, the People for the Elimination of Animal Cruelty Exemptions. Okay. It says a group is trying to ban hunting, fishing, and pest control in Oregon, the group called PEACE, which I just described. The initiative criminalizes injuring or killing animals, including killing, for food, hunting, or fishing. More specifically, injuring or killing animals, including farming, ranching, hunting, fishing, trapping, pest control, research teaching, And also breeding practices. The only exceptions are some veterinary practices and self-defense. Oh, yes. Like if a cougar tries to kill you, you can strangle it to death like that one guy did. Or it says if a pest becomes a health risk. So how many...
rats?
How many rats before it's a health risk? How many... what are the other cockroaches?
Cockroaches.
Yes. How many cockroaches? I don't know why I'm saying it like that. How many cockroaches... La cucaracha roaches until it's a health risk. I would say one. Because mm-hmm. do I have to wait until they can breed?
I don't think you'd be able to kill spiders under this.
And I don't like that. You know that we had to kill a spider mid-show the other day. I still see the little print where you took his little body away from the wall. Remember? You see it up there? Yes. So I'm totally against this. The only thing on that list I'm in favor of is research and teaching. Yeah, I don't think that you should be killing an animal for the purpose of teaching anything or researching anything.
And I don't like don't injuring animals at all.
Well, so. Right. Why don't would we ever injure an animal? Yes. No. It says that... The group says killing animals is a choice and that the initiative prioritizes plants instead of killing animals and argues that there is no reason to maintain the status quo. Guy running it says this is the closest they've gotten to putting the issue on the ballot. After gathering 105,000 signatures since July 2024, they need 117,000 verified signatures to get the measure on the 2026 November ballot. So this is a petition. Sorry, I called it a proposed law, but it's a petition. So they want to send it to the ballot in Oregon, which I almost think if it makes it to the ballot in Oregon, that there's a chance people might pass
there's
it there.
There's a chance.
There's a chance. And it's like, people don't know where their food comes
from. Until you remind them that you can't kill spiders if you pass this. And they'll be like, what?
Yes, that's just so, so weird. All right, another major company moving from a blue state to the free state of Florida, Palantir. They sent out, and this like surprised everyone. So apparently they hadn't discussed this with Colorado leaders, hadn't been like, we might move sort of thing at all. And everybody was blindsided by it.
I think
they announced it on X, didn't they?
They have been targeting this company for some time, so it's not shocking. It shouldn't be shocking.
Yeah. Protesting it over ICE and ties to Israel. So they just posted on X, we've moved our headquarters to Miami, Florida, which I was like, and Miami has been working really hard. In fact, before I even quit my job with Fox 13, I had the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, at the time. He's not the mayor of Miami anymore. And he came on my show at Fox at the time to talk about how this was in the middle of the head tax debate where they were trying to punish Amazon and in Seattle. And he was basically coming on saying, come to Miami. So they basically had overhauled a lot of things to try to attract tech companies to Miami. And so Palantir becomes just the latest. It's an AI automation company, just the latest to move there. This is from the Denver Post. Palantir, Colorado's largest public company, is leaving Denver for Miami. I love how they start it. And again, it's the vilification from the media too. The media is as much to blame in these blue cities and blue states for companies getting up and leaving. The first word, controversial. Mm-hmm. Controversial data analysis firm Palantir Technologies, Colorado's largest public company with a market value of $312 billion, announced on social media Tuesday that it has relocated from Denver to Miami. They talked about the firm's post on X. It said, "We moved our headquarters to Miami," the firm said in a post on X without elaboration, seemingly catching local leaders, including Governor Jared Polis and Mayor Mike Johnston, by surprise. No details were immediately provided as to how many Denver employees might be relocated to Florida or what functions will remain in Colorado, if any. And it's important to figure that out and to know the details, because is this a situation where they want their headquarters in one place for tax purposes or whatever it is, and they're still going to maintain some sort of presence? So a lot has been happening, and it's another example of, look, don't bite the hand that feeds you, and don't be surprised where if you vilify, they just don't take it anymore, because they have the money to move. It says the company has faced protests during its time in Denver, initially for its support of the Israeli military and more recently for working with U.S. Customs and Immigration Enforcement to use AI to identify targets for deportation. Love that. Members of the city council have chastised Palantir publicly for its work with ICE, and advocacy groups have tried to push the council to divest from any services or contracts with the company. They also faced a large protest on January 31st at their new Cherry Creek office, and another one this past weekend with protesters chanting, "Palantir out of Denver." And no, well, you got your wish. You got your wish. I have to love that. And Francis Suarez, who I mentioned, was the mayor of Miami. He responded to the announcement. He said, "This is a tipping point. What a watershed moment for Miami. Our city is the city in the U.S. that best embodies the American dream and spirit of working hard, risking capital, and leaning into innovation." So, yeah. So not only have they had the kind of vilification wholesale about, you know, ties to Israel and ICE or whatever it is, and chance of Palantir out of Denver, the Colorado legislature has also been targeting the company, making it harder to do business in the state. And they've had some laws that have directly been aimed at AI companies more broadly, but clearly it was targeted at Palantir. It says the Colorado AI Act sets first in the nation comprehensive consumer protections intended to safeguard the public from being discriminated against when AI is used to make decisions about their healthcare, employment, or other important areas. So it was just one of these things where, and for the record, Governor Polis spoke out against this law. Why? He's actually a fairly sane Democrat. He knew that it could make it less likely that AI companies choose Colorado by putting more restrictions on them and the work that they do. He said he worried that the new law would be burdensome and put a damper on AI innovations. So, yeah, he said the law creates a complex compliance regimen for AI developers and deployers, in part because it holds companies responsible for unintentional discrimination and that it might reduce innovation by making it harder to do business in Colorado than in other states. Yeah, so they didn't pass this because of what Polis said, and they were going to push it kind of down the road, and they said they'd delay the original law's effective date by 4 months. They were trying to amend it. So there's a law already that kind of targets AI, but when they were trying to make additions to it, Polis is like, look, you're going to screw us over. And they did. That's the FO part of FA. Do you want to say something? You were looking at me like, I have something to add.
No, that's good. No, it's true. I think that it's a lesson to our legislators.
Literally.
To continue to target these companies. These companies are saying to them, don't do it, don't do it. Yeah. Like, this is hard, this is hard. Although none of them are loud enough, in my opinion. But they continue to do it, and then they leave, and then they want a big explanation. I mean, everybody's annoyed that they're not saying more about it.
But they think they're just going to take it. Very clear. Like Amazon, when they went for the head tax, Amazon said, okay, we'll move jobs to Bellevue. And they're like, oh, call your bluff. And then they move jobs to Bellevue.
And this,
they
this,
have the money to do that.
This program that they, or this AI thing that they wanted them to abide by, they're like, they don't even know how they'd implement that.
Yeah.
And so they're going to move so they don't have to.
Yeah, it's just wild. Okay, so I want to talk about this FCC-CBS whole lie controversy. Stephen Colbert is so dishonest. I mean, the man lies with ease. So he had taped this interview with Texas State Representative James Tallarico, and he's running for Congress. And basically, CBS is the one that said, hey, we're running into the Fair Time Doctrine because it's during an election. So given what he does at CBS, he can't just give a bunch of airtime to one candidate and not the other candidates. This is a very long-standing thing. Now, the rules are different. People always think that, like, I'm subject to the Fair Time Doctrine. No, this is a little bit different when it gets into CBS and a program like Colbert's. So it's applied differently to new, actual full-fledged news entities than it is a show like Colbert. But he tapes this interview, and you know this was all planned. They knew that there was an issue with the FCC Fair Time Doctrine. They knew it. He's not dumb. How long has Stephen Colbert been doing this? But he taped the interview with this guy anyway. And then they put it out there, him and the candidate, and said, this is the interview Donald Trump's FCC didn't want you to see. And then, of course, it took off and it got viewed millions of times, way more than any episode of Colbert gets viewed. And they made it seem like this was the FCC. It was planned all along. But even CBS put out a statement, and CBS said, no, that's not the case. We reached out to Stephen Colbert and let him know that there was a Fair Time Doctrine issue, and we tried to work with him. The CBS put out a statement denying what Stephen Colbert said. And then the chair of the Federal Communications Commission denied the government-censored CBS Late Show host Stephen Colbert. FCC Chair Brandon Carr said Colbert would have his would have run his interview with Texas State Representative James Tallarico, who's running for U.S. Senate, if the Late Show complied with equal time rules by airing interviews with competing Democrats or choosing not to air the interview in Texas. So there were options. They could just not have aired it in Texas, or they could have aired interviews with Jasmine Crockett, is also in that race. But he chose not to do that. So it had nothing to do with a decision made by Donald Trump or the FCC. And yeah, So it's just wild. I just don't understand how, and then people just eat it up. They absolutely eat it up. And they're like, oh, and he knew what he was doing the entire time. Anyway, all right, let's get to our subscriber poll coming up next. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? If you have questions about any of that, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, and he can help you kind of make sense of what's going on in the market and talk about how your portfolio is positioned and whether it is positioned well for the financial uncertainties that are in front of us. Plus, he'll just give you kind of a general breakdown of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can get some one-on-one advice from Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital about the strength of your retirement portfolio and how it's positioned to handle risk. Okay, speaking to our Seattle Times' trash segment, I asked our subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, are you concerned with the gap in pay between CEOs and employees in major corporations? Yay or nay? Nicole, I think I know the answer for you, but are you concerned?
I'm not concerned.
I mean, maybe this was too easy for our subscribers, but I always want to say, like, am I just a horrible human and I don't care? What is it? I mean, 25% of you say, yes, you are concerned. 75% say no. Greg says executive bonuses are ridiculously too much in publicly owned companies. Rick says good executives never turn off. They deserve the compensation. But board members should be much more conservative in awarding of stock grants for achievement of financial goals. Nina says, by and large, no, but I guess it depends on the organization and the way it's structured. Some could probably afford to spread the wealth more throughout, I am sure. Jen said, yes, I am. CEOs in private companies should have a lot of room to decide what they want to do, but when they are making millions and staff make so little they qualify for state benefits, that's a bit of a problem. Well, that's kind of a good point, is like, are your employees having to suckle off the system because they don't get paid enough, and could you kind of make it so they do? I understand that point a little bit. Joey's mom, yes, take Starbucks, for example. The upper management makes an insane amount of money, and the people working in our community do not make a livable wage. And I struggle with the term livable wage because it means so many different things. The livable wage for a college student who needs a part-time job is much different than the livable wage needed for someone with a family. And maybe a job like a Starbucks barista isn't the job that's going to provide a quote unquote livable wage for someone who has a family to take care of. Let's see. Private companies do what they want, always have. Yes, it matters. There was a time when the pay was even more, when companies put their profits back into all their people and loyalty mattered, from the company to the employees and from the employee to the company. When you don't pay your people well, you treat them as disposable, you have constant turnover, you are in perpetual turmoil. That's where we are now and why we have the problems we have. But again, isn't it the free market? Like, if you have a company that's actually not treating its employees well, they won't have a company for very long. Unless we're in a market where you literally can't find another job. But I think for some of these, I mean, every restaurant I go into, that's an exaggeration, a lot of restaurants I go into and coffee shops say hiring, where they want, and that's kind of been the case since the pandemic. There were all these service industry jobs, especially when people were getting a lot of unemployment benefits through the pandemic, where they just couldn't find work. Sarah said, even though I can understand some of the perspectives presented here, I voted yes. The CEO of the healthcare organization I work for makes $11 million annually, while the rest of us haven't even had a cost of living raise since 2023. Every year, we're essentially getting a pay cut. We're the ones working hard, so the organization brings in money. That's really frustrating to me. But on the other hand, I'm grateful that I have a job. Things could certainly be worse. My husband's company's CEO, on the other hand, doesn't give herself an annual bonus, but instead gives that extra money to her employees. I feel like that's much more fair. But then you also have to work at, like, again, free market and market demand. If you want a CEO who has experience in running a major company with 1,000 stores or whatever it is, you have to pay them what the market demands. And like Starbucks that took their CEO from Chipotle, like, you, if you want a certain caliber of CEO, you're going to have to attract them, look at what other companies of that stature are paying their CEO. And that's just what the market dictates. So yeah, but I appreciate some of you guys offering a different perspective than I have on the issue, for sure. And yeah, if a company wants dedicated employees who are going to be with them for the long haul, they need to give them opportunities to grow, to advance, to make more money, and just generally treat them well, or else they're going to go work somewhere else. All right, subscriber and live stream comments. Somebody said, Brand, you only read comments from the live stream. That's not true.
That's not true. Maybe your comments just haven't been good. Okay. Because we pull them, Miranda pulls them from Patreon, Locals, mm-hmm. Facebook, YouTube, X, all over the place. Maybe you just got to get better at commenting. I don't know what to tell you. All right. On the anti-fraud amendments passing, huge news. Shirley says, hallelujah. This is what we've been praying for, mm-hmm. bipartisan wisdom. Yes, indeed. Alice, we need more moderate candidates. I think that's the path forward, is meet me in the middle. And also understand for Republicans, too, that, like, yeah, sometimes you have to take the wins where you can get them when you're in the minority. And that might mean voting for a bill that you don't really like the program, but you get a little win like that. And so I think that was a very smart way for some of these Republicans to figure out how to get some very common sense fraud protections in the bill.
The only way.
The only way. Yeah. Late Night with Tina. So by voting for and endorsing this House bill, we are okay using race as a reason to help anyone, excluding all others? No. Like I said, it's going to pass without them. So the idea is, can you help it pass with some fraud protections? And that was the way to do it. Because I don't think that Democrats, if Republicans hadn't pressed the issue, would have put fraud protections in there. Jerry Granboyce on the initiative killer bill dying. It doesn't matter in regard to the initiatives. Democrats will find a way to crush them. Mm. Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, we'll see what happens with the Boys and Girls Sports thing.
Make them spend money this way.
Yeah. Paul, socialists don't like dissenting voices. Conservatives welcome constructive criticism. Yeah, there's some outliers on both sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely think there are Donald Trump, my beloved president. I don't think accepting constructive criticism is really a quality that he has. He has many, but that is not one of them. On parents demanding accountability from Puyallup, Scott says, way to go, getting the nation's eye on this. Amy says, go, parents, go. I agree. And I loved the grandparents and the former. There was a lot of people who raised kids and sent them through the Puyallup School District who are still taxpaying members of the community who showed up and are like, this is not
love it.
What I remember. On WEA dues, going to collecting dues, Russell said, could I donate my union dues to Undivided? Well, yes, you can. Donate is a tricky word because we're not a nonprofit, but you can give them to us if you'd like. Deanne, wow, a way for the teachers union to assure they hire someone who is ideologically in line with them. I think COVID shots are required every 6 months. Yeah, so let's say you started in 2020, 6 years, you'd have like 12, maybe 12 COVID shots by now.
Oh my, I cannot imagine.
This is an interesting comment from Chuck. What's the pay disparity at the Seattle Times? Do their delivery drivers make the same as the CEO? I'd be curious. I mean, I don't, their CEO probably doesn't make a ton, but I would imagine it's around $1 million, wouldn't you think?
I have no clue. I have no idea, but that would be an interesting disparity challenge.
Wouldn't it? Yes, it would. Mm-hmm. Let's see. On Oregon looking to ban all, and we should say, not Oregon, a couple people in Oregon want to ban.
That's a pretty significant amount.
Six, how was it, 150,000 or something?
Something.
Want to ban all animal killing. John Thomas with a $10 super chat. Oregon trying to outlaw hunting and fishing, defining it as animal cruelty. I can't wait for the eco nuts to fight with the indigenous people advocates. Yeah. Does that include the tribes? Right. Of course it doesn't, because you can't tell the tribes what to do. Dawn, this is a communist tactic to target conservatives. Just steal all our joy. let's see. Michael, Oregon is a sanctuary state for rats now. You just have all the rats, literally all the rat rodents fleeing across the state lines into Oregon for sanctuary. That's actually funny. And I bet you, like, over time, it's survival of the fittest, right?
Yep.
So if you had this place, and this is true for, like, and I'm getting a little into the weeds on your funny comment, but this is true for, like, an animal habitat, right? Or like an animal sanctuary.
I mean, for animals that live near the freeway.
Right. They're not living in town. They're living somewhere where they're not bothered.
The ones that figure it out live the longest.
So you know what? I know you were trying to make a joke, Michael, but actually over time, future generations of rats would figure out that they need to go to Oregon to survive.
It would be like, instead of flying south for the winter.
Yes.
It'd be flying or whatever, soaring to
scurrying
Oregon.
South.
Yeah, there you go.
Scurrying south. One more super chat. Jack Hart, screw Steve Hobbs. He's protecting illegal aliens on the voter rolls. Okay. I'm just saying this one thing. A little positive reinforcement might not be such a bad idea. All right. We're going to play a little clip from the socialist mayor of Seattle's first attempt at a State of the City address. You won't want to miss it coming up next. First, we had Dave Taylor with First Mark Insurance in the studio last week, one of our wonderful advertisers. And I was talking to him about all the good things I hear from undivided viewers and listeners about the service that they offer. And I told him, I hear from people that, you know, sometimes you guys turn their business away. And he said he's okay with that. That to me is a sign of an honest company where you're going to say, hey, we can't beat that. You've got great insurance at a great price. I would keep it.
Yeah. And if I can just say this really clearly, we are good with that.
Yeah.
We are okay with that. Mm-hmm. Right. Because we believe there's three things that every customer should have. They should have the right coverage. They should have it at the most affordable price possible.
Yeah.
And they should get great service. If they're getting all three of those things where they are, then they should stay there.
Yeah.
Right. They're in a good place.
Yeah, great company. And also, I want to just read this that Dave Taylor sent us after he was in. He said, so since February is Heart Month, First Mark has a thing this month where they're honoring our friend Dory Monson. So I just want to read what he said. So they're making donations for each 5-star Google review they get at First Mark and each referral they receive. They're going to make donations to support leading edge cardiovascular care at Providence Everett, helping to strengthen heart health resources right here at home. The campaign is dedicated to the memory of all of our late friend, Dory Monson. He had a remarkable way, as you know, of making people feel seen, valued, and connected. So Dave Taylor with First Mark says, in his honor, we hope this effort brings a little more kindness and good into the world. So if you leave First Mark a Google review, they'll donate $25 for every review in February. And then if you share a heart introduction, so if you make a referral to a new client, First Mark will donate $50, which I think is pretty cool. So you can join and become a member of the First Mark family, but also help the First Mark family grow, help with Heart Month, Heart Health, in honor of our friend Dory Monson. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. And one thing I'd say about that is, if you're already a member of the First Mark family and you just haven't taken the time to leave a review or do that, now's a good time to do it, because it's like you're already working with First Mark, so you can leave a review and then they'll donate some money on behalf of our friend Dory Monson to support cardiovascular care at Providence Everett. So maybe take some time to do that today in our closing sanity check. So Katie Wilson, the new socialist mayor of Seattle, she gave her first State of the City address. And look, when you've like never had a job before and really never had any major responsibilities, it doesn't really surprise me that this is how your first State of the City address would start out.
Good morning. How are you all doing today? Okay. You ready for this? I don't think I've ever talked for as long as I'm about to talk, so we'll see how it goes. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Can you please? Technical difficulties. Okay. But there. Okay. A little bit less. A little bit back the way you came.
Oh, no.
Back. Okay. Okay. That's good. Thank you. Okay. Okay.
Oh, no. It gives me, having done, I think what she was trying to get them to do is adjust the teleprompters. Having worked in news for a long time, there is nothing worse than a technical issue that's out of your control. But I mean, like, this was, so they sent out invitations to the State of the City that didn't have a time and place. And so they had to resend out the invitations because they didn't tell people when to come. And then it's like, did you not practice this? Did you not practice? And then don't go out until your mic is working and on. Don't even go out there.
It's like, did you do a sound check?
Have we not done a sound check and practiced with the little thingies and all that? It was just...
Did Bruce Harrell not leave his how-to guide?
He wasn't great at this either, but at least his teleprompter and his microphone worked. So it was definitely amateur hour. I got to say, though, I feel bad for her because that is just secondhand cringe, the worst.
Oh, she asked for it. I don't feel bad at all.
All right, fine. I was trying to be, you know, upbeat because I started the show on such a high note. Anyway, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We absolutely appreciate every single one of you who watches the show, who shares our clips, who helps us in this mission of ours. And a special thank you to our paid subscribers. I know you have a million things that in this day and age that you have to subscribe to. So the fact that you're willing to give us $5 of your hard-earned money every month means the world to us and helps us continue what we're doing. So go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. If you'd like to become a paid subscriber on Patreon, Locals, or X, we'd love to have you. And we will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.